I'm Arun Vanagopal, and you're back with The Takeaway. And now, a discussion on wrongful convictions.
I was scared, terrified, because I'd never been in trouble with law before.
When Robert Davis was just 18, he says he was coerced into confessing to two murders he did not commit, and he ended up spending 13 years in prison.
So I was complying and doing what I was supposed to do and what I was told to do, and basically I was told I was being arrested for murder.
He was exonerated in 2016. Now Davis, along with one of his lawyers, Laura Nyreiter, is trying to change the country's understanding of wrongful convictions, in part through a new podcast on this issue.
Because there's a lot of innocent people that are in prison and everything, and it's crazy, and there needs to be change in that.
I asked Laura, who's an attorney from Northwestern University's Center on Wrongful Convictions, to describe Davis's case.
Just outside Charlottesville, Virginia, he's picked up in the middle of the night by police officers and hauled into the police station and accused of a double murder of a neighbor that lived down the street. And here's Robert. He's 18 years old, a high school senior. The whole overnight interrogation is caught on video. And what the video shows is absolutely shocking, right? You've got Robert not knowing what's going on. This is all out of the blue for him. And the officers bring him in. They accuse him of this double murder. And they begin lying to him about the evidence against him. They tell him that his DNA was found at the crime scene, even though it wasn't. And then they tell him that he's facing the death penalty unless he confesses. And this goes on and on and on overnight. Robert's asking for his mom. He gets a no. He asks to take a polygraph to prove his innocence. They tell him no. And finally, he breaks and he says, "What can I say I did to get me out of this?" One of the clearest moments of the sort of psychological breaking point of interrogation that I've ever heard. And then they feed him information about the crime. He adopts it. He repeats it back. He weaves it all together into a confession. And then at the end of the tape, by about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, he looks up at them and says, "Do you think by me telling you all this that I'm going to get to go home?" And they look at him and they say, "What are you talking about? You just confessed to double murder. You're going to jail." And he says, "Why am I lying to you about all this just so I can go home? Because I am lying to you." One of the clearest, most immediate recantations I've ever seen. And based on that confession and nothing else, Robert Davis was sentenced to 23 years in prison as an 18-year-old. He served 13 and a half years before being exonerated.
This is, I guess, the nightmare that we all associate with some sort of dystopian sort of reality, but obviously happens all across America. Why was none of this evidence, why did it not come to light at the time?
Well, you're right. I mean, these are stories that are being told right now, right? We had the story of my client, Brendan Dassey, and Making a Murderer. Then, of course, Ava's retelling of the Central Park Five, the Exonerated Five's story in When They See Us. These stories are coming out and grabbing the popular consciousness in an incredible way because of the injustice of these of what's happening to these innocent, you know, teenagers. And what's fascinating to me, you know, Robert Davis had one of the best lawyers in the state of Virginia. He fought his case. He fought his confession. But what's interesting is that nothing that happened in that interrogation room, as shocking as it is to all of us, nothing that happened in the Central Park Five's interrogations, for that matter, or we're told by the courts, even in Brendan Dassey's interrogation, none of it is illegal. We may find it immoral. We may find it appalling. But none of it is illegal. It's all permitted tactics. So that's a big part of what we're trying to do by telling these stories in our podcast, is show folks, you know, it's not just a New York City thing. It's not just a Manitowoc, Wisconsin thing. This happens, like you say, all over America. And by telling these stories again and again, we can start identifying ways to solve the problem of false confessions.
So let's get to the solutions. I mean, on the Wrongful Conviction podcast, you say there should be checks and balances for this, meaning other police officers reviewing tapes as well as prosecutors and judges. But in reality, how does this play out?
Well, in reality, only 26 states require interrogations to be recorded at all. And that's a phenomenon that really came about only in the last 10 or 15 years or so. So all of this audio that we have, all of this video that we have from inside the interrogation room is brand new. All this glimpse that we're suddenly being allowed, you know, inside this hitherto secret space. It's all brand new stuff. So one of the most important reforms is getting those other 24 states simply to adopt rules requiring electronic recording of interrogations. But that's only the first step. That's only the step of developing the record of what happens in the room. Then you got to look at the record. You got to look at it with objective eyes, and you've got to have a legal framework in place that recognizes what every layperson sees when you hear these stories, which is, this is wrong. It shouldn't happen this way. It doesn't lead to voluntary confessions. It doesn't lead to reliable confessions.
In one part of the episode, you mentioned that law enforcement officials are allowed to lie during interrogations. Do many people in the public know that this is allowed?
I didn't know until I went to law school. No, I don't think many people know at all that police in the United States are allowed to lie about the evidence during interrogations. So when you listen to Robert Davis's episode, you'll hear the police telling him that they found his DNA at the crime scene, and that because they have his DNA, there's no way he's going to be able to convince anyone that he's innocent. But of course, that's a lie. There was no DNA whatsoever. And then they go a step further because they tell Robert, this 18-year-old kid, no criminal history, no experience with police, they tell him, you know what, Robert, we can't lie to you about the evidence. They're lying about lying. It's incredibly manipulative, incredibly deceptive. And that's one of the first reforms that needs to happen. There's actually a bill that was introduced recently in New York, one of the first bills of its kind in the United States, proposing that this kind of deception be outlawed during interrogations, precisely because it is such a known risk factor for false confessions.
Tell us about Robert. What's his life like now?
You know, Robert's a great guy. He is an absolute survivor. I'm proud to know him, and I'm proud to have been part of the team that fought for him. Robert got out in 2015. He was formally exonerated in 2016, and he is living a rich life. He's back in the Charlottesville area where he grew up. He's working at an electrical union, working 5 days a week, full-time job. And he just got engaged a few months ago, which is a wonderful thing. So he's moving on with his life. He's rebuilding it as best he can. You know, there's real trauma that comes from enduring, you know, incarceration of any kind. But of course, particularly wrongful convictions of innocent folks. Robert's been through the ringer, and I'm so proud of what he's been able to do with his life.
So how can a court or a state make amends for holding an innocent person like Robert behind bars for so long?
You know, 33 states have adopted statutes that permit compensation of some kind to people who have been wrongly convicted and wrongly incarcerated. That means, of course, that there are 17 states that don't offer any compensation whatsoever. But even in the 33 states that do, the amount of compensation that we're talking about can be just appallingly low, you know, $10,000 a year. Something like that. So for folks who lose 30 years of their life to wrongful incarceration, innocent folks, the amount of compensation that they're getting through these statutory schemes is just not adequate at all. It's not adequate to reflect what they've endured and what they've lost. So we're still making strides, frankly, on making amends to the people that have suffered at the hands of these egregious errors.
Laura Nyreiter, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure, everyone. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Robert Davis's story and many others can be heard in the new podcast, Wrongful Conviction, False Confessions.